Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
And game one is in the books. The Spurs hang on to steal it, 101-96.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for. Waited for years. Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Kander, front court left. They have a chance to foul the worst free throw shooter. Adams trying to defend them. Kander to the rim. Scoops and scores with the left hand. Timeout, Oklahoma City. And now with 11.4 seconds remaining, Portland hits the century mark and leads by 6-194.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brendan Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on a packed Monday afternoon. In fact, I can almost guarantee right now we will not get to almost anything else other than two stories today.
It was an amazing weekend, and I want to give a tip of the hat to Sunday, because it's sometimes you go in with high expectations for something and it doesn't live up to the hype. And I have been rattling off now for like 2 weeks how that was going to be the greatest TV day of the calendar year.
You did.
Like, I put my flag in the ground. This is the day, and no day is going to top this. And I needed some things to go my way. And boy, did they ever go my way.
All of them went your way.
Right. I mean, imagine the disappointment if Patrick Cantlay wins the Masters, the Blazers get blown out, and then Game of Thrones is a complete dud from start to finish. It's a dumpster fire, and everybody's coming in on a Monday bummed out. Everything was great yesterday.
I'll be real honest with you. If Cantlay or Molinari or even Koepka, I would turn my mic off and I'd let you guys talk.
Just let us go a little bit.
Because that would have said Tiger was in contention yet again and didn't get it.
Would have been his third straight major of being close but not finishing.
And I'm a huge Tiger groupie, always have been. And golf is kind of always, I love playing golf. I don't so much like talking about golf.
Yeah, you're not a huge golf fan.
Right, and outside of the major tournaments, I don't really watch a ton of it either. Now, teach their own, but if Molinari or Cantlay won, or Xander Schauffele.
Hey, don't knock Xander Schauffele.
I don't care that it's Cantlay and Cantley. Who cares? The story is not about how his name is said. It's Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
But if those guys would have won, I'm being 100% genuine when I said I would have just turned my mic off and said, hey, the Masters were this weekend, and I would have turned my mic off and let you and Swag
let's go
wax poetic on what you thought of everything that broke down between Schauffele and Cantley or Cantlay or Koepka or Molinari. I wouldn't have cared. But because it broke that way, it got to a point where when I got back at the station yesterday at like 5 after the game, mm-hmm. and I was cutting some audio up, and I was thinking about the show. And I thought, man, that was a good game. Good energy. Blazers snapped the streak.
Big playoff win.
Should we do a poll question on the text line or the Twitter account of what's more lead worthy, though? When you start a show, we are in Portland. So sure. I get there's a lot of Blazer fans out there that are dying to hear about the Blazers win. But man, I have this feeling that Tiger Woods was the bigger story.
Sure.
So I was stuck between a rock and a hard place of, as a radio host, what do you navigate to? Do you navigate to Tiger because that was the biggest story in all of sports in some time?
Absolutely.
Or do you talk about the Blazers snapping the streak because it's the local team who played really well defensively and are up 1-0 in a series that a lot of people don't think they can win?
Well, the beauty of it is that's going to be basically the entire 3-hour show today. It's those two topics. So we're going to get to both of them.
Yep.
It is unique when you're in a local market because the Blazers haven't gotten much national attention or coverage, whereas Tiger Woods has dominated the headlines. Like it tells you how big of a deal that is when you're getting, I got probably three or four updates on my phone after it was over from just random news outlets. Like CNN sent me a push notification. Hey, Tiger just won the Masters. Like, really, CNN? Like, that tells you what level it can reach to. And the crazy thing, too, was really the only complication that my Sunday of not moving and watching TV all day was going to have was navigating the Masters and Blazer game being on at the same time. And having to watch the Blazer game on the DVR delayed because I didn't want to divert attention away from the Masters. I wanted to watch the thing in its entirety and then get to the Blazer game. And I'm sitting around Saturday watching the rounds, and they announce, hey, we're moving this up. Like, everybody's teeing off by 6 a.m. on Sunday. So I set the alarm for 5:30. I was out of bed at 5:45, walked out to the couch, poured a cup of coffee, and it ended almost perfectly. Like, I don't know if you could have dialed it up any better because – the Masters was basically wrapped up, I want to say, around 11:30-ish, if you watch some of the post-round stuff, and it gave you an hour window. Like, I was able to get a couple of things done, walk right around the house, do some form of activity.
Before Did you just say, walk around the house?
Right? Take a couple of laps and then sit back down before the Blazer game started.
Well, just to give you an idea, the snapshot here. Now, I don't have access to Blazer local ratings. I'd imagine they were pretty damn high, right?
I'd imagine so, yeah.
That being said, the headline on Deadline, which is a TV following thing, Tiger Woods scores for CBS with highest Masters final round morning ratings since Reagan was the president of the United States. That will leave you to grasp the reality of what everybody was watching. You can text it and tell me you hate Tiger. You don't like golf. Fine. Be the person that wants to act like you're the only one who wants to say they don't care. Yeah. There's a group of you out there, and you're not unique. There's a lot of people that want to act like they didn't care at all. Most of us sports fans, though, loved it. There is no other athlete that could get me to wake up and watch golf at 6 a.m. until about noon. No athlete. Even put the respective sports out there. From 6 to noon, you were watching one person play a sport. Nobody. Even LeBron, Jordan, all those, like 6 hours, I'm like, they're too exhausted. They look tired. They can't do this. I'm out. Six straight hours. That is what Tiger Woods does.
He captivates the sports audience like nobody else can. Like nobody ever has in my lifetime, no matter how the greatest of all time in any other sport you want to point to. He transcends not just the sport of golf, but the world of sport itself. And that was what was so incredible yesterday. Now, the ratings, I think it's almost unfortunate because if that would have been a normal ratings window where the leaders tee off around 11 Pacific, you know, give or take, and they're playing in the middle of the afternoon into the early evening hours on the East Coast, the ratings would have been even higher. Like, that shows you how crazy it is to get a number like that on the West Coast when that thing, Tiger Woods was in the final group and they did threesomes to speed it up to avoid the thunderstorms. He teed off at 6:20 a.m. Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And you still were able to pull in that number. Now, I saw they had some combined ratings because once it was over, they re-aired it again. And I think they picked it up right around when the guys were making the turn, and that's how they aired it the rest of the afternoon. So they combined the numbers for some people that maybe missed early in the morning. But if you can pull in that kind of number with a dude teeing off at 6:20 a.m. Pacific and not making the turn until, what, like 8:30 a.m. when maybe some people still aren't even awake? Like, that shows you how special of a sports figure that he is.
I had to watch the final four holes in the Blazer media room. Mm-hmm. And by the way, before that, I had to come to the station. We picked Marcus up. I drove to the arena. This is at like 10:15-ish. I had it on my phone the whole time.
Yeah.
Didn't know this, so I'm an idiot. But I just want to say, like, Masters.com was amazing.
It is amazing.
I don't have CBS, so I was so grateful that they just had it and they didn't care who paid or didn't pay, and it was just free.
That's how you got to watch on Thursdays and Fridays,
Right, and so I'm watching on my phone. We get to the media section. We're way too early. Parking is easy. We're like, okay, we got a lot of time to kill. I'm like, let's go watch Tiger. It's on in the media room, and there must have been 23 people, media members.
Okay, reporters,
And this room isn't very big.
No.
So I'm trying to paint a picture. This room's not very big. Just 23 media members that are all doing pregame, their writers, PJ Carlissimo was in there, radio guys. We're all just huddled watching Tiger Woods on the TV.
Yeah.
They turned it off 5 minutes, 10 minutes before Terry came to the podium because for pregame stuff. And everybody was really ticked about that. Like, you can't just leave it on. It's muted.
Tell Terry we'll talk to him after the game, okay?
Terry walks in. Stotts. Yeah. Stottsy walks in. First comment. Who turned the masters off?
What's going on in here?
And he was asked maybe three or four questions. Yeah. He gets up and he goes, all right, guys, I got to go watch the masters. Yeah. The game's in an hour. I got to watch Tiger win. And he bolted out.
Yeah.
And he was watching it in his office the whole morning. That guy was getting ready for a playoff game. He'd lost 10 straight as a head coach.
That's where his mind was.
Tiger Woods winning the Masters was kind of priority for him at that moment.
That's where it was, man. Incredible Sunday.
Let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on tap brought to you in The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. I got to be honest, Dirt, I'm going to let you navigate a little bit.
Okay.
I'm still kind of torn of where we go.
It doesn't matter to me, man. We can go wherever you want to go.
Listeners, do you have a preference? I don't ever do this, but
yeah.
Yesterday was so unique. So maybe we go Tiger. Maybe we continue with Tiger. Already got a text on here I disagree with. Somebody saying if he gets to 18, he's tied with the GOAT. If he gets 19, he is the GOAT. I think he's the GOAT. But a lot of that has to do with the generation you live in and who you get to watch and who you miss. We got the Portland Trailblazers, of course, winning their game one, snapping their 10-game losing streak in the postseason. They beat the Thunder 104-99. Andrew Sharp writes for Sports Illustrated. He also co-hosts a podcast with Ben Golliver. He'll join the show at 12:30 today. Get his thoughts on the Blazers Thunder. We are going to, for the first time ever since we introduced it, not have NFL Whip Around at 1 o'clock today.
No, it's just, we're bumping NFL Whip Around today.
There's too much stuff to talk about.
We'll talk to you next Monday, NFL Whip Around, all right?
We will get to this. We'll give you a glimpse of the playoff games that went down in the NBA. Some wild upsets. Dirt tuned into Orlando-Toronto despite saying he wouldn't.
Yeah, well, how about that? When did the NBA playoffs become the Stanley Cup playoffs, man?
Just imagine when Kevin Durant leaves Golden State. It's going to be wild. Yeah. I'm telling you guys.
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry, also the biggest choke artist of any all-star athlete of all time. I really want you guys to think about this one, and maybe you text one in that I have forgotten. All-star caliber, top seven in his position in the league, making that kind of money. I don't think you can name me a bigger choke athlete than Kyle Lowry in the playoffs. Started out with a dandy, 0-for-7.
He didn't make a shot.
DJ Augustine outscored him by 25 points.
I'm not my Raptors pick. I'm not panicking, okay?
You shouldn't. You still got Kawhi. So we'll get into that a little bit. We also have the Russell Wilson story that is Peter King wrote some stuff on the MMQB about it. Not sounding good if you're a Seahawk fan.
I've started to prep my crow just in case.
And I found it interesting how every media member is pointing the finger at the Seahawks. Russell Wilson might find a way to get himself out of Seattle, which he might want. And everybody's just pointing at the team. It's just the team's fault. Russell Wilson is not to blame. So we'll get into that. Blazers, Tiger, obviously going to be a big part of the show. I'll do this. We will get to Tiger, and we will get to a lot of Tiger. A
lot of Tiger.
But Andrew Sharp's joining us at 12:30. Let's dive into the Blazer game first. They beat the Thunder yesterday. What did you make of what you saw? Were the Blazers lucky? Or do you think this might be the way the series goes? We'll talk about it next. You got Dirt and Sprague. Thanks for being with us here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Do we even talk or do we let the whole thing play? I mean, I don't know what the protocol is here.
What a great cap to a Sunday. By the way, new intro for the show, too. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did. People make a big deal of that. Why is that such a big deal?
Because it's been the same one for 10 years.
Okay.
And I was like, whoa, that's...
Well, the wall's down.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, you haven't caught up.
From last season, yeah. 2 years ago.
Okay, I know a lot of people were texting about Tiger. I promise you we are going to have a lot of Tiger Woods today on the show. I guess I'm making the decision. We have Andrew Sharp on from Sports Illustrated on in 12 minutes to talk playoffs.
Yeah, once you get into Tiger, there's no turning back. I don't want to go Tiger, basketball, Tiger, right. Basketball.
It's a weird flip.
Yeah, flip-flop, flip-flop.
So we'll get into it. But the Blazers get their game one win, 104-99. Ennis Kanter was the player of the game for Portland. He had 20 points and 18 rebounds.
He was great.
Dame had a monster game. Mm-hmm. CJ had a monster game. Didn't get much help from the bench.
Nope.
But the Oklahoma City Thunder couldn't buy a three-pointer to save their life. In fact, they finished the game from three-point land. They had 15% And I think one of those threes came at the very, very end. At one point, they were down to 11%.
I think two of those five makes came in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I think they did too.
Because I remember tweeting out the stat. I think they were like 3 of 28 or something like that at one point in the fourth quarter.
Portland got up by as much as, I believe, 19. They led by as much as 14 after one. And then Oklahoma City late in the fourth, they had come all the way back and they cut it to one before Lillard hit a huge shot. And they snapped their losing streak in the postseason by beating the Thunder, and they're up 1-0 in the series.
Well, look, first and foremost, hallelujah. The drought is over. They're not going to set the NBA record for playoff losses in a row. The 10-game streak, it's done. We can stop talking about it. They got to win, and I think they felt ecstatic in that locker room afterwards for getting the monkey off their back. I think whenever you have a playoff game, there's multiple storylines that come out of it, and I think a lot of them are positive for Portland, and some of them are negative for Portland. Like, the positive ones are Dame and CJ playing well, combining for 54 points. Dame average, and we talked a lot about it last week, 18 points per game in the series against New Orleans. He had 11 points in what, the first like 4 minutes of the game? Like, came out, hit the first three that was deep. You knew he was locked in and ready to go. So to see those guys play the way they did, it was awesome. And then I think one of the major storylines coming in was Cantor, and at what point do his defensive deficiencies outweigh what he can give you on the glass and offensively? And we're kind of wondering, is there going to be a tipping point where you can't play him? You got to get him out because OKC's attacking him too much, and it doesn't matter how much he's scoring. You didn't get to that point yesterday. He was bad on defense. He's always been bad on defense, and he will continue to be bad on defense. But the production that he gave you scoring, being efficient with the ball, 20 points, grabbing the 18 rebounds, all the offensive, I think it's 7 offensive rebounds, setting up second chance points for himself and for other guys. It was a big aspect of that game. So I think those are the positives that you take out. The negatives are, will Oklahoma City and Paul George's shoulder injury, like we talked about Friday, might be the storyline here. Will they be 5 of 33 from 3? Because that was, you had a 19-point lead, you couldn't miss. That lead evaporated, and with, what, 2 minutes and 20 seconds left, it was 93-92. Mm-hmm. And Dame hit the big three-pointer, put him back up by 4, and they settled in from there. Can you rely on OKC being 5 of 33 from 3 going forward?
I believe Oklahoma City led the entire game for 23 seconds, yeah, and that was in the first quarter. Here's Enes Kanter in the postgame.
After we got a win, I was walking to the locker room. I saw the GM, Neil, and he told me, what a great decision, right? I said, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, I wasn't the worst team in the league, and I wasn't even playing because they thought I was too old to play. And with the situation and all the drama, everything, you know, it was just so frustrating because all I just wanted to go out there and just win. And just a couple days ago, I looked in the mirror and say, man, I am blessed to just be here with an amazing organization, with an amazing teammates, and they trust in me. So it just definitely feel amazing, and that definitely, I should feel definitely blessed and appreciated.
Here's CJ on them snapping that playoff losing streak.
It's good to get a win at home. I think that, you know, our goal isn't to win one game. We want to take advantage of this home court advantage. I think we played well enough to win, but there's a lot of things we can improve upon. I think Dame will tell you last year is over with. You know, we learned from it. It was a good experience for us. I'm glad we had to go through it. But now we know what it takes to kind of get over the hump, and we're looking forward to the challenge.
He got feisty with Ferguson, too, early on. Mm-hmm. They had some words. Technicals were called on both guys. So there was an element, and Richmond put this in his story today, of the Blazers are just, I think they're a little mentally tougher than last year. And that's not to say they're going to win this series, but I think that was a real humbling experience. You get swept by Golden State, nobody's really batting an eye about that. But
no, you're the 8 seed.
You get swept as the 3 seed, and you're the favorite over New Orleans like that. That's a whole summer of ridicule and criticism, and even during the season, it's like not buying in. Let me say, I'm still not convinced that my opinion should change about the series, because Blazer fans have one of two ways to look at this. They either believe 100% that that defensive effort's going to be the same way every game in this series, because it wasn't just Cantor who was okay on defense. He was no bum. Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu, mm-hmm, they both had stints on Paul George, and I thought they put a lot of physical pressure on him, really kind of banging in and putting more pressure on that shoulder injury. Paul George had the eye-opening line of, I haven't shot a basketball since Houston.
Yeah.
Had trouble lifting his arms past his head, and then he just goes out there and he decides to play, and he looked okay operating. But the thing with the shoulder is, if that is bothering him that much, there is a real chance that this is the Paul George you get in this series, right? The jokes about playoff P are out there, but when you have shoulder injuries like that in both, it's not easy to just go out there and suddenly drop 45 points and be 18 of 22 from the field. There is a shot that this is who Paul George is, and if that is the case, if we walk out of Game 2 dirt and he has the same performance and it looks the same, even if they make a comeback, there's going to be a lot of people, including myself, wondering, okay, Blazers could be winning this series.
Yeah. Yeah, if he doesn't look good going forward, I'm with you 100%. And that's where I think the fun part in a seven-game series is the adjustments that happen game to game. Like, with everything that we now know about Paul George, and you brought this up Friday, and we talked about it for most of the show Friday. Like, this is going to change the series if he's not 100% healthy. My question to him would be, why are you taking 15 three-pointers?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't lift your arm above your head. You can't lift your shoulder. You can't use your shoulder. You clearly aren't comfortable shooting a basketball because you haven't done it in a week. You're in a lot of pain. Why are you attempting 15 three-point shots? Like, and that's where I think for OKC in game two, that's the thing I'm most excited to watch is, do they get into the pick and roll more? Is there more attacks going directly at Cantor? Do they involve Steven Adams into the, and Steven Adams had a good game on Cantor. Cantor did not have an answer for him in the paint. He was 8 of 14 with 17 points. Like, do they change the way they attack Portland? Like, OKC is a bad three-point shooting team. They have been all year, and the numbers bear it out. Outside of Paul George early in the season, I think they're going to change up their offense, realizing that that's just not something that you can rely on. And if I'm Paul George, he took 24 shots. 15 of them were from three.
Now, I can defend it a little bit in this. Who else is going to take their shots? And that's the problem with their offense. Their offense can be just god-awful to watch at times, right? Russ isn't going to be the guy that's always going to go out there and shoot a bunch and go drop 35. And if it ain't him, Steven Adams is going to be limited to about 20 or 25 points at most. And then who do you got if you're OKC? That's why, even though you knew he was kind of just off, you're also sitting there going, well, he hasn't played. This is kind of maybe his way to shoot himself back into a rhythm. And that's what great players do, right? Even Ray Allen has that famous quote, shooters shoot. You miss, just keep shooting. It's the way you get yourself out of it. I think he's going to do the same thing. Even if he shoots 3 of 15 again, I'm not going to be shocked at all if tomorrow night he shows up and he's doing the exact same thing. It's just going to be, are those shots going in? And what do we make of Portland allowing them to come back from 19? That was a concerning thing to me. And I thought Dame did a really good job of pointing this out. He didn't get in over his skis about them snapping that streak and getting a win. I think he was happy about it, but it's like, I have bigger goals than winning a playoff game in round one.
As you should.
But he made an astute observation, and I think he saw the film immediately after the game. They had a lot of wide-open looks from the perimeter, Oklahoma City did.
And they couldn't hit.
And they couldn't hit. Nobody could buy a bucket. If those happen again, my money would be on that Oklahoma City doesn't shoot that poorly yet again. And then defensively, I thought OKC really stepped it up. And I know people point to the 10 turnovers in second quarter. In the real-time watching that in the arena, I thought, oh, Portland, what are you doing? Stupid passes. I rewatched it when I got home. I give Oklahoma City a lot of credit for that, because what they did was, not only did they start communicating better defensively, but they were almost showing open guys that weren't open. So like Dame would drive baseline and he would see somebody in the corner and he'd throw a pass, but Oklahoma City's defenders would just be off him enough to know that that's going to cause a pass. Dame would try to not give an errant turnover, and boom, bad pass. There you go, bobbled OKC turnover. So Oklahoma City's defense is what's going to get them back in this series, along with obviously not shooting 15% from three.
Well, and you knew that coming in. OKC had more steals per game than any team in the league. Like, they're known for that. And Portland fell into the trap a little bit and allowed them back into the game. I think everybody at the end of the first quarter, like, you get off to such a great start, and Portland couldn't miss. It felt like every shot they threw up in the first quarter went in. They scored 39 points in the opening quarter. They followed that up with 15 points in the second unit, partially second unit, in the second quarter, and you allowed them right back into the game. Like, to only be up 14 after essentially making every shot and OKC struggling a little bit at the end of the first quarter was concerning, because I think over the course of a seven-game series, as we've mentioned, those things will even out. Like, Portland is likely not going to have another quarter like that in this playoff series, and OKC likely will bring up their percentages just slightly. Like, the reason why I do pinpoint the three-point shooting, though, for OKC, like, Portland had a good night from three. They were 44%. That's a good clip for a team. They took 25 as a team, and OKC shot 15% and took 33.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm Oklahoma City, I'm going back and watching that film and thinking to myself, we made five threes the whole game, two of them coming in the final seconds of the game. and we took 33 of those things. Like, if we just take away a couple of those looks, maybe a few of the tough contested threes, and we attack Cantor, and we dump the ball into the low post, or we run a pick and roll and try and get an easy bucket at the rim, or get to the foul line, which they didn't do a whole lot like we saw them do in the regular season, they easily could have won that game.
Well, and Oklahoma City, unfortunately, their refs did not allow physical play. So Oklahoma City was being physical. They got called for it. And then you could flip that to Portland had an MO of we're gonna go down to the ground too when you guys put any contact into us. And they did it a lot. I think they had at one point they had like three or four straight charges, it felt like. And Oklahoma City was fed up with that. So we'll see the officiating and how that changes, if at all, as well. Portland gets their first playoff win in 2 years. It was a great atmosphere. The energy was insane. I thought the pregame video kind of sucked. It's like a rain theme for those that
wasn't good, huh?
I think they've had better ones. The red lights are better to me.
I'll say this, man. Just watching on TV, that atmosphere looked awesome.
It was loud.
Like you would expect a Portland atmosphere to be in the playoffs.
And then the fact Portland couldn't miss in the first quarter, it just added to it. Andrew Sharp covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated. He'll join us next. We'll get his thoughts on where this series is going and what he made of game one. Andrew Sharp is next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. 12:36, time for the Daily Ticker here on 1080 The Fan. And we talk with Andrew Sharp, senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, does the Open Floor podcast with our friend Ben Golliver. He's on Twitter at Andrew Sharp, and he's joining us on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild hotline to talk OKC in Portland. Andrew, thanks for the time out here in the Northwest, man. I'll just start. We were talking about game one. Did Paul George kind of just show us that he might not have what it takes physically to stay healthy this series and get OKC over Portland?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the fear if you're on the OKC side. He did not look right, and the shooting hasn't looked right for about 2 months. And so I think there are a lot of red flags even coming into the playoffs. And then, you know, you hear the kind of cryptic reports about his health, and they said he was a game-time decision. And it was like, whoa, okay, so is this – worse than anyone realized. And then, you know, he goes 8 for 24. I think he was 4 of 15 or 3 of 15 from three. And it was ugly. And when you take away George's shooting, the rest of that team can't really shoot either. So it's like Dennis Schroeder goes 0 for 7, but if he's taking 7 threes, he's not going to make more than 1 or 2 or 3. And it's a tough situation for OKC. The only thing I would add though, is that it was still a really close game, even with George playing that way and even with Russ struggling from the outside. And I do think this is going to end up being a war, regardless of what they get from George. But certainly OKC is a lot more vulnerable than they would have been 2 months ago.
Yeah, and I just saw this. Paul George, I think at practice, Andrew, just said that his shoulder is pain-free right now.
Aha, okay, day after, we're pain-free now. On that, too, I mean, you mentioned the shooting, and we were just talking about it before we had you on, about like the 5 of 33, like that's just terrible, but they still had a chance to win the game. And I'm wondering, moving forward, because we know shooters shoot, and maybe he's just going to try and shoot his way out of the slump, how much does their offensive attack change in game two? Because to attempt that many threes without being able to make them is a bad clip, but it felt like they could attack the inside at times. They didn't use a lot of the pick and roll against Cantor, who's not good defensively. Do you expect a different offensive game plan in game two?
That will be the most interesting thing to watch, because I think Cantor obviously was great in game one. And the question is whether OKC is going to be able to be smart enough and kind of strategic enough to find ways to get him in open spaces, get him in the pick and roll, and kind of punish him. And that falls to Billy Donovan, who is a guy who is clearly a good coach, but we've also seen him in some postseason moments where you're like, okay, so what's the plan here? And then Russell Westbrook is another one where, like, I trust him to go hard and play at 150 miles an hour every single game and impact the game in 10 different ways. But if you're asking me, like, who's the point guard who's going to play the smartest offense and stay under control and get guys in uncomfortable situations, that hasn't always been Russ. And so I think that works in Portland's favor if they can't find a way to kind of take advantage of what Cantor doesn't do well and start to – get a little bit more variety in the offense, because the fact is, this is who the Thunder have been for a couple years now. And they just have not been very creative on that side of the ball. They're great on defense, and that's one of the reasons these games will be close. But, like, if Paul George isn't shooting, they don't necessarily have a plan B. And we'll see if that changes over the next week or two. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah. Andrew Sharp, our guest, senior writer at Sports Illustrated. We're talking NBA Open Floor Podcast with Ben Golliver. Give it a listen and follow him on Twitter at Andrew Sharp. Okay, let's say, real quick, what was your prediction for the series?
My prediction was the Thunder winning in six. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the game yesterday and I started to regret that, because I think there's a chance if Paul George isn't healthy, and I didn't see that he came out at practice today and said he's pain free. It's hard to keep track of this, because the other day he was like, I haven't raised my arm in a week. I don't know what's going on with Paul George, but it may just come down to who's better between Westbrook and Lillard. And I think I prefer Lillard at this point in both their careers. So I wish I could change my pick, but I was riding with OKC to begin the series.
Well, and then, I mean, going into game two, the Blazers didn't get much help from their role guys, which is something we knew was going to be big. And Dame and CJ were able to, you know, score 54 points combined, and then you add Cantor's 20 on top of that. How concerned, I guess, would you be for the Portland perspective that some of those, you know, Rodney Hood didn't do a ton in the game? You didn't get a ton offensively, at least from Harkless. Aminu only a couple of shots. Curry only had 8 points. How concerning is that, I guess, moving forward for Portland?
I wouldn't be concerned by that, because I think you can count on at least a few games in this series when some of those guys are going to show up. I mean, Aminu, that's just kind of the way he is he'll have a couple shaky games offensively, and then he'll kind of blow up and play lights out on that end. And Harkless is another guy who I think is going to be really important for them if they want to make any kind of real run. Because when he's a little bit more aggressive on offense, he makes them a lot more dangerous as a team. So I think that I honestly, to be able to come away from game one with a win with some of those guys no showing the way they did, at least on offense, is a good sign for Portland, because some of those guys are going to show up. Like, I'm a big Rodney Hood believer, and my guy Ben Golliver has given me heat for it over the years. But I think he's going to have some moments, you know. He could help those guys.
Yeah, I just thought of that video The Ringer did, Andrew, that came out, and you just reminded me of the guy in the video who's like, I'm a Rodney Hood guy. I've always been a Rodney Hood guy.
I know. For better or worse, I need a 12-step programmer with Rodney Hood, but I think he could have some moments this spring. We'll see.
What would you think of the Blazers' chances? I know, look, there's so much to be played here between these two teams and even Denver and San Antonio, but based on what we've seen, and look, the Spurs have the playoff experience. Denver doesn't. Oklahoma City doesn't seem to be all that healthy. I know Portland doesn't have Nurk, but they played decently well in a lot of spots yesterday. What would you say the chances, like, how shocked would you be if I told you in just 3 or 4 weeks that Portland is in the Western Conference Finals?
Not shocked at all. And that's one of the things that became clear to me as I was watching that fourth quarter on Sunday. It was like, you know, OKC is not the same team they were 2 months ago. And then you start to think about the other side of the bracket, and San Antonio is going to be really solid and hard to beat no matter what, but they're also not going to scare anybody, not going to blow anybody off the court. And if it's Denver versus Portland, I think I trust Denver. I think I trust Portland because of the experience. And so all these teams are on about equal footing. But you got guys like Lillard, and McCollum played really well on Sunday as well. And I think I would have to trust them more than anybody else in this spot. And that's crazy to think about, because after they lost Nurkic, it really did not look great for this team and where things were headed. And now they at least have a chance to make a little run here, which is fun.
Let's get a prediction for you for tomorrow's game. We all took, I think, OKC to win the series in six, so we agree with you there. But we did like Portland to win game one. So tomorrow will be a pivotal game in that regard. And as we've talked about positives and negatives to take away on each side, how do you think it plays out tomorrow night in Portland?
I think the Thunder will find a way to get a win tomorrow night in Portland. And this is going to keep going back and forth for the next 10 days. And we're going to come down to game six or game seven before anything is really settled. And that's part of what makes it. I mean, this is the best series in the first round, and it really is going to be a toss up. And I think Westbrook is going to have some huge games as well. So I think that's tomorrow night will set the tone for the rest of the series, where there's a chance Portland could go out and take control. But I would expect OKC to punch back and to really make this a dogfight for the rest of the first round.
A great back and forth 10 days. Sign me up. I'm all in. Andrew Sharp, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Open Floor Podcast with Ben Golliver, and on Twitter at Andrew Sharp. Andrew, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it, and we'd love to get you back on during the playoffs.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. You guys take it easy.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from him. He had OKC in six. Tomorrow probably changes almost everybody's opinion. You're up 2-0 in a best of seven.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know the whole cliche, it's not a series till someone wins on the home court. Sometimes you don't need to win a series on the other team's. You don't need to win a series to win a game on the other team's court. In fact, Portland can lose all the road games.
They can.
And still win the series.
They can. When you have home court advantage, that's what you want. We all took OKC in six in the series, and I think we all took Portland to win game one.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night is where I think it changes our mind. We expected them to come out and play well on home court in game one, which you like to see. Now we'll see if they go do it again tomorrow night.
Let's talk about the bench. Do you trust the depth of Portland to step up? Or is this going to have to be C.J. Dame and a Cantor-type performance that they did yesterday to win the series? 55305, Better You Today text line. That's next on The Fan. Coming up, we got Tiger Woods winning the Masters. First major in 11 years. It's an interesting mix of people who counted him out and the people who said he'd never do it, coming out and talking about how they cried watching it happen. Shout out to all the real ones like myself that never truly gave up hope. Now, did I have some majors where I'm like, God damn it, he's not going to win it? Yeah, sure. But I always believed. I didn't see it coming, but I believed.
You were a believer. True believer.
And I think you would have believed, too, had we not made that dumb bet years ago.
No, I always thought he could get back to that point. And when he was at his lowest of lows, I knew it was not happening in the short term.
Well, see, we made that bet before, I would say, his lowest of lows happened.
Well, not personally, but sure. Some of the back surgeries and stuff hadn't quite hit yet.
Well, remember that DUI was only a year and a half ago.
Yeah. That
one was pretty bad.
Okay, he just took a couple too many pain meds, you know?
Yeah, but he went back to rehab for that one.
What state am I in? I don't know where I'm at right now.
I'm going to do something that this station hasn't been known for.
Okay.
I'm going to shock the world right now.
What do you got?
Neil Olshey deserves a round of applause.
For signing Cantor.
And Curry. And getting Hood.
Yeah. Now, I agree with that.
Should be noted, if all is fair in love and war, the bench was a -8.
The bench didn't give you much.
Myers was good for like a second, and he almost had the posterized dunk, and then he took the worst fadeaway I've seen a player decide to do.
That he did.
I think thus confirming he's gone after midway point of next year. Seth was a -2 on the PER, but I thought he was good for them.
He hit some big, he hit a couple of big threes when the offense was straining that kind of kept him from losing leads sooner.
He hit some timely shots for them. So
I agree with that.
The plus minus to me is take it for what it is. Rodney Hood hit a couple shots, but he didn't do it. He was more of defensive impact, I would say, than offensive. And it wasn't that amazing, but he can get better. We've seen him put up 15 to 20 points.
Evan Turner needs to be better.
Yeah, and Zach Collins needs to be better.
Yes.
Zach Collins played, 10 minutes, and he had four fouls and four turnovers or something like that?
So I will say, Neil Olshey, if you said 1080 The Fan to Blazer fan that listens to sports radio, they would probably go, oh, Isaac Ropp, and they hate Neil Olshey, right? Okay, fine. Whatever. It is what it is. But I'm just being honest here. You got to give him credit for getting guys to at least even replace the injured player in Yusuf Nurkic. Cantor was a big pickup for them. Whether he does that stat line again does not matter to me. That was important to have him because you don't win that game or come close to winning that game without Enes Kanter. That being said, I am horrified of the idea of him getting in foul trouble early tomorrow.
Yeah, it's that, and that to me is, if I'm OKC, exactly what I'm doing. Early
you
in that
are
game.
Attacking
pick
him.
Pick and rolls, ISOing, just drop it into Steven Adams. Yes. Any way, shape, or form, I'm not taking any threes. I am going pick and roll, attack, attack, attack on Cantor to try and get Myers Leonard and Zach Collins into the game, because
absolutely,
they did not leave you very fearful moving forward. And maybe Collins is slightly better defensively, but he didn't show that in game one. And they're not going to give you the offensive production that Cantor can. And I think that's the fun part about a series. Like, it is very fan to, it's almost, we're going to do the same thing with Tiger. Like, he wins one, and then the conversation immediately turns to, will he win 20? And now it's like, we do this with the Blazers. They win game one of the series, and it's, I mean, Western Conference Finals.
Well,
they,
I was,
no,
okay.
I know. I'm not saying you're doing that
question. I deserve it.
I know, but I'm just saying, like series change. Like, you, right. They're going to attack a different way. Portland won't start hot. Maybe the role players play better. Maybe Paul George's shoulder does get better and he starts to knock down shots. Like, these things are such a game by game breakdown, and they're going to change the way they attack each other every given night. And that, to me, if I'm OKC, priority number one is to go at Cantor and make it so bad that they can't keep him on the floor, because his 20 points and 18 rebounds was a huge reason, if not the reason, that Portland was able to win that game. And you got to make him feel it on the defensive end of the floor.
Well, and I think the thing that worries me too is because, look, they won the game, and I was actually really impressed. The defensive effort that they put out yesterday was the most impressive thing, right? Cantor's rebounds, his timely scoop shot at the end there, all of that was great. It was fun. I'm not stunned that he had 20 and 18. It was that they didn't seem to attack him defensively.
Right.
I believe I counted one pick and roll they put him in. I was floored and amazed by the defensive effort of Portland. Oklahoma City averaged this year 119 points against Portland. They had 92 points with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Now, Paul George's injury is a big part, so I'm not going to dismiss that completely. But let's give some freaking credit here. Portland played their ass off yesterday defensively, and even some of the bench guys, their plus-minus might have been positive or negative. I just felt like almost everybody out there, including Myers and Zach, the effort was there. It was this, we're not letting you guys get easy shots.
Yeah.
And they did an exceptional job, I thought, most of, not all the game, putting out the effort. Did they get lost at times and leave open threes?
Sure,
that's going to happen. But for what this team is defensively without Nurk, I thought that was the most impressive part of that their performance yesterday.
Well, they were really physical on Paul George, which you wanted to see, especially early in that game. You had a great tweet afterwards, the quote from Dame basically saying he told the guys, Aminu and Harkless, after the game that he loved them, because sometimes what they do on the floor doesn't show up on the box score. Like, you can look at that game yesterday and say, well, Aminu was 2 of 5, 10 points, pretty unforgettable offensive night. Harkless was 1 of 5, not overly aggressive on the offensive end. They each had 3 blocks, and I thought for the majority of the game played really good defense and were very physical against Paul George. So I loved that, just an attacking nature that they brought, and they're going to need to bring it every single game. Like, there's no let up. And look, this was a weekend in the NBA playoffs. I make a lot of fun of the NBA playoffs, saying there's not a lot of intrigue and everybody knows who's going to win. You had upsets. Denver lost game one at home to San Antonio. Toronto, what the hell? They lost again on their home floor. Philly no shows and they're looking at cell phones. They lose on their home floor. So in a weekend where a bunch of teams couldn't handle fighting for home court advantage that they earned after 82 games, you went out and defended it. I think that was the most encouraging part.
Yeah, so Portland, they get that must-win game, because I agreed with Windhorse last week when he said it. They did not want to fall behind 0-1.
No, if you lose game, I said it last, if you would have lost game one, the series to me is, how do you recover from that?
And we'll see. Paul George says he has no pain in his shoulder whatsoever. Don't think I'm buying that.
He's pain-free, man.
Unless he's doing the CBD thing.
Can we also, and we'll have to get to this later in the show, I know we're against it, and you won't be able to comment on this because you were at the game. Did anybody else watching get sick and tired of the Curry family?
Well, I saw the Curry family celebrating. What I couldn't, because I couldn't listen to the game.
Yeah.
I did see a funny exchange where Van Gundy said, is that his sister? And Jackson says, we don't all look alike.
It was his fiance.
Yeah,
he asked
that's
if it
Doc
was his
Rivers'
sister.
Daughter.
Yeah, which I didn't know until the broadcast. They spent like a 3-minute stretch interviewing the family during the third quarter. And it was like a back and forth. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, he hasn't really been in the league.
We've seen plenty of the Curry family.
I know.
They're all over TV.
But
in
it's the
NBA
other
finals.
Curry. It's the other Curry.
Not the parent. No, the parents are the same. We see them all the time.
By the way, what did Van Gundy say after Jackson dropped that line?
I think he just kind of chuckled.
Okay.
It was a really, I mean, I laughed out loud when he said that. That was funny.
Can I tell you one quick tidbit, quick.
Okay.
And then we'll get to Tiger. I saw Mark Jackson right after the game. He it was halftime. He sprinted to the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
And I got there right after him. And as he came out, he said, "What's up, man?" And I went out to shake his hand.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't shake my hand. And I said, "Mark." And he turned around and I go, "Hand down, man down." And he shook my hand.
Well played.
I thought it was funny.
Well played.
He kind of chuckled about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Somebody texted in and said, "My wife asked, why the hell were they so obsessed with his family?" It was a bit much.
Because the dad played, the mom was an athlete.
I know, I'm just saying, we've been through that. But
I know.
We know the family. They will be on TV the entire NBA Finals.
I know. It's just... All right, pack second hour, and guess what? A lot of Tiger Woods. Did you cry when he won? I need honesty here because I've heard... I've heard a lot of people tell me that they've cried. Did you cry? 55305. Let's talk some T. Woods next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.